got the need to podcast. This is episode 30, Tropic Thunder from 2008. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And Mike, before I introduce our two guests, I realized, I don't know that this is necessarily a great example of Cruise Club, this particular movie, because just mostly because Tom Cruise is not in it very much, right? Like, he's a minor character.
Yes.
But we are in the midst, and I don't think we realized, we're in the midst of a 6-episode stretch, which might be, I don't want to say like the dark era of Cruise Club, but it's just like the one with the most questions, because last episode was Lions for Lambs, which you and I had not seen.
Right.
This episode, Tropic Thunder, small part. Next episode, Valkyrie, which I have not seen.
Oh, okay.
After that, Night and Day, which is him and Cameron Diaz, which I don't remember it being great. Then we have a Mission Impossible movie, because of course we do. And then we have Rock of Ages, and it's just like, this is a very strange stretch of Cruise Club after hit after hit after hit. It's just like, oh, okay, let's figure out what's going on here. And we're going to rebound in a big way with Jack Reacher and Edge of Tomorrow and more Mission Impossibles and all this different stuff. But like, and again, not that this is bad, but I was just like, we're in a weird stretch of Cruise Club right now. And I don't know if we realized the extent of that until I was looking at the schedule today.
No, I am right there with you too. I mean, I've seen Valkyrie. I'm actually looking forward to that. I've not seen Night and Day, and I totally forgot about that Rock of Ages thing. And oh boy, like, that to me feels like his Da Vinci Code trilogy all wrapped into one. Maybe, so I don't know, but you're right. I was not expecting this sort of up in the air period for him, and like this cameo, it's wild.
Mike, this is not a George Clooney podcast. We are not talking about up in the air. We are talking about Tropic Thunder, a movie in which Tom Cruise earned a Golden Globe nomination for Best Supporting Actor, because apparently that's a thing that we do. And also Robert Downey Jr. won a Golden Globe. It was a nomination and a Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor. This is a weird. It's weird. And they both lost to Heath Ledger for The Dark Knight. So this is like a very weird awards year.
Oh, that's so appropriate, though. Oh my God. That's amazing.
To join us to talk about this movie, to talk about Les Grossman, Les Grossman.
Less is more.
We have the host of the Foodie Films podcast right here on the Cage Club Podcast Network. We have Kyle Reinfried. Hello, Kyle.
Hey, what's happening, guys?
Hey, my leaf
Welcome
brother,
back
Kyle.
Welcome back to Tom Club.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a little while, but happy to be back.
Been a while.
Thank you, and it's good to be back. And well, also, welcome back to the show, Zach Dazan. Hello, Zach.
Hello. It's
welcome
been,
back to you,
you know,
as well.
A couple weeks.
That's right. Yeah, I feel like Zach has joined us recently.
He was on Toy Story, right?
Yeah,
and Zach's got a bunch coming up. Before we go in-depth on Tropic Thunder, I'm going to do a quick plot summary, in case people have not seen this. I feel like this is the kind of movie that you would expect to find everywhere, and I guess a lot of people probably own, like, this feels like the DVD or the Blu-ray that, like, even if you don't have a ton, it feels like this is one that, like, a lot of people would have bought, but, like, I'm surprised that this isn't streaming for free somewhere, that this, you have to pay to rent this, which I was surprised. Like, it feels like this is the movie that should be everywhere. But in case you have not seen Tropic Thunder,
people are going to pay to watch this movie. It's good.
I guess so. That's another way of looking at it. Here is what Tropic Thunder is about. So a bunch of Hollywood's biggest stars, both current stars, former stars, are making the movie Tropic Thunder based on a memoir from a Vietnam veteran. Egos and rookie director Steve Coogan just not being good at his job quickly get out of check. There's a news report that says 5 days into shooting, they're already a month behind schedule. They blow a $1 million special effect on a huge explosion. Tom Cruise plays bald studio executive Les Grossman, who demands that things change. So they come up with an idea to drop all of the actors in the middle of the woods and shoot it guerrilla style. The director, Steve Coogan, immediately steps on a landmine and gets blown up. Things break bad even further. Some Vietnamese insurgents attack them, but they get scared off with prop explosions and blanks. Some of them get captured. They start fighting with each other. They fall into the middle of what's called the Golden Triangle, which is the center, the core of this, like, hard drug superhighway. Big action movie things happen. They spoof Platoon and a bunch of other movies. They finally escape. We then smash cut to the Oscars, where the movie that was released is Tropic Blunder, which is kind of the making of, like, it's kind of the Heart of Darkness of Apocalypse Now, which wins 8 Oscars, $400 million, Tug, the Ben Stiller character, wins Best Actor, I think, over Tom Hanks, over other Tom, for his role in Tropic Blunder. And Tom Cruise is happy enough to dance to Ludacris's Get Back as the movie ends.
Nicely done.
Well done.
Tropic Thunder.
So is Tropic Thunder, Tropic Blunder, in the end, is it a documentary or is it a narrative film?
Oh, yeah, good call.
Because he wins Best Actor, and no one wins Best Actor for a documentary.
We actually don't know what that category is. I don't think they say the award goes to or whatever, but I would assume it's actors. We got John Voight, we got Tom Hanks, we got Tobey Maguire.
Is it the movie we just watched, except the actors are themselves?
That's a great question. I wondered that. the first time I saw it. But now, when you know, you look in the audience, I wonder, did John Voight have a role? As was he Four Leaf in the movie? You know, like, it's a weird.
I think he was in a different movie.
Yeah, he's supposed to be in a different
okay.
period.
Because in the end, Tom Cruise is still Les Grossman, unless he played himself in Tropic Blunder. But it's a great sort of twist to think about.
If they're winning actor, it has to be that we watched the movie that they were in.
Yeah.
But he is nominated for Tropic Blunder, though, so I don't know. Maybe there's two? I don't... Who knows? Also, what documentary has ever made $400 million and won the Oscars?
Tropic Blunder.
All right, so let us kick things off. So like I said, you know, Tom Cruise, not in this movie a ton. I will start here with my... And I don't... Even if we were not watching for Tom Cruise, like, I had never seen this movie before in my life before 2 years ago. This is one of those like 10 or 15 or 20 movies that my fantasy baseball league, Take a Drink, had me watch as draft prep. When I watched it the first time, I was like, I'm going to like it more. Like, I feel like this is the kind of movie that I'm going to like more the second time. Didn't really come true. Back then and today, watching it for Cruise, watching it not for Cruise, just to enjoy in general, my favorite part about this movie is the Tom Cruise stuff. I also really like the Matthew McConaughey stuff. I love when they get together. My struggle with this movie, and we will get to it as, and I don't want to jump ahead of things, and I don't want to say too much of the movie, but like, I don't really connect, I don't love a lot of the Vietnam stuff. I don't love a lot of the, I like Ben Stiller, I don't love Ben Stiller. I like Jack Black, I don't love Jack Black. Like, a lot of that stuff I like but don't love. Like, what I really find enjoyment in with this movie is the Tom Cruise stuff and is the Matthew McConaughey stuff. So my favorite part of this movie is just, like, Tom Cruise's intensity, his hyper-specific acting choices, you know, all the things that he apparently did. Like, Ben Stiller said, like, all of this was his choice. You know, the dancing, the look, the makeup, the hair, him wearing big hands. Like, everything was Tom Cruise developing the character, and I think it's such a parody of a studio executive, and I think that it works so beautifully. So it's just a benefit, I think, that we're watching for Cruise. But, like, even without the podcast, what he's doing in this movie is my favorite part.
Yeah. There was even talk at one point that he was going to do his own movie with this
character.
Yeah,
I remember that. Yeah.
Right? Or they were at the least going to put him, work him into another Ben Stiller film somehow, some way. Like, it's even more amazing knowing how inside Hollywood Tom Cruise is, that all this is definitely depicted on, like, real life and things like that, which makes it even crazier. Best part of the movie for me, too. And my favorite part, too, is also the movies about movie making, right? So all
yes.
the times, like,
I
about movie making.
Like,
yeah, and, like, when they cut to Danny McBride doing, like, the pyrotechnics and all that kind of stuff, and when they're partying while they're making the movie and all that kind of, and definitely McConaughey.
This is the movie where I learned what a key grip did.
So that's my favorite part of the whole
punch
movie.
Guys in the face?
Well, I mean, that was a joke, and I missed it, and I was like, to look up what a key grip does, and I'm like, oh, that's why he's good at punching.
Yeah, exactly. Like, key grips, just from working on sets, like, at that point I had worked on a couple of grip, and electric tend to be bigger guys, especially key grips. Like, it's, you know, it's kind of like a blue collar position. You're just setting up sandbags and stands and just dealing with heavy stuff, and that was just a big guy, and so you knew to ask for the biggest guy in the room, which was the key grip. So I love that moment.
It's a perfect industry joke.
And there's rumors, at least there's IMDb trivia, that says that this might be based on Sumner Redstone, which, Mike, if you remember a couple movies ago, that they had that big falling out with him in Paramount when they dissolved their development deal, and then he sort of revived things. So, like, not the look. The look is apparently based on this movie's producer, Stuart Cornfield, but apparently a lot of the mannerisms, the bravado, if you will, was apparently based on Sumner Redstone. So this is Tom Cruise definitely getting getting some of his demons out. You think you're going to get one over me on me? Like, I'm Tom Cruise. I'm going to be in this movie with, like, a bunch of comedy guys. Probably not get paid a ton because it's a small part, but, like, I'm going to make you look a fool on screen. Anybody who knows who you are knows that I'm going to be making fun of you. So
it's
a weird power move, I think, if that's the case. You know, mm-hmm. Who knows? I'm going to be trivia being what it is. But so, Mike, you're with me. You think the best parts, your favorite parts of this movie are the Tom Cruise parts.
Yeah. I mean, that's not to say that I don't like other parts of the film, too. I mean, I think the part I always laugh the hardest at is when they're trotting through the jungle and they've lost Ben Stiller, and Jay Baruchel is just, like, talking about why
Blu-ray.
The Blu-ray format won out over HD.
Because I've had that conversation with people.
And he's like, it basically came down to porn and video games. Downey just turns around and he goes, you've been talking to me this whole time? I fucking lose it every time. That's, like, one of my favorite. That's, like, up there with, like, everything we've watched for Cruise Club. Like, probably, like, the hardest I ever laughed.
And that's your birthday boy, Jay Baruchel, from The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
That's right. But, I mean, I also love how intense Jack Black gets. Like, I do love Jack Black. He's my Nacho Libre forever and always. I just feel like, you know, by the end of this, when he's in his underwear covered in mud and just like pulling a gun out of his ball sack and just like, he's just committed so hard to it.
When that truck explodes and he's just like, my ass! Like, just like that whole moment of everyone slow-mo. Going through. Yeah, it's so good.
Kyle, what about you? What's your favorite part? Is it Jack Black? I know you do love Jack Black, but what's your favorite part of this movie?
I mean, you know, it's still pretty freaking crazy, the whole Robert Downey Jr. bit. That's ballsy. I read a few things, and he said in the end, like, you know, he was nervous. I mean, this comes out the same year as Iron Man. You know, he's like in his revival, and he takes this role, and it is really over the top. Obviously, they have Brandon T. Jackson, an African American, in the movie, calling him out on it. So, like, at least you have that, the awkwardness of him playing a black guy, but he just plays it so over the top, and just so many of those moments. Yeah, kind of around that same moment that Manzi was saying, just like when they're trekking through the jungle, and just like him and just saying like, I was associated down at San Anton, like there's just an Apocalypse Now reference right there, and oh, you're looking more shredded than a julienne salad, like just ridiculous lines.
Classic
like that.
Foodie film scenes.
Yeah, like I'm not saying it for those food reasons. This just happened to be like, I mean, this came out in a summer where there were three other great comedies. There was Step Brothers, Pineapple Express, and Role Models. I think it's just one of those comedies it's great to see in theaters around a bunch of people kind of around the time it came out.
I mean, I think what's very difficult about this movie at any point, like I think whether it's 2008 where you're like, oh, like why is he playing a black guy, or why is Ben Stiller playing Simple Jack, like this movie is trying very delicately to thread like what's funny and what's too far. And like I think because Robert Downey Jr. is such a capable actor, I think that he's able to give more credence to a role that otherwise, like, in the wrong hands would be like, oh no, this is a nightmare. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think you have to cast someone there that's really talented. And I don't know that this is necessarily okay. I mean, I'm not offended by it, but if somebody was like, oh, fuck that movie, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I see where you're coming from. I had read something that he was hesitant to take the role, which makes sense.
Of course, yeah.
But that he just liked the script, which was written by my guy, Justin Theroux, star of The Leftovers, who would come back, Mike. He'll come back to write, or at least co-write, Rock of Ages. So he's going to be not done with Tom Cruise before too long.
And he, speaking of Downey, like he went and wrote Iron Man 2, so
he
there's
did.
Connections.
But Robert Downey Jr. just liked the script here and also just wanted to work with Ben Stiller. And I'm like, that doesn't seem like a great explanation, but like, sure, okay. Also, like on a similar note, like there's Al Pacino, the character Al Pacino, if you haven't seen it, not the actor Al Pacino, but he's like this closeted, you know, very overtly sexualized man who at the end of the movie is finally in a relationship with Lance Bass of NSYNC. Kevin Hart was apparently approached with that, and like he got into hot water because he's like, he said something that was apparently homophobic, but then kind of corrected himself or tried to correct himself into saying like, I don't know that I could realistically pull off. Like, I don't know if I could play a gay character. Like, I don't know if that's in my wheelhouse. But like, there's a lot of things here that are touching sensitive issues that work and don't work kind of at the same time. And I think it's strange for a comedy to touch on all of these different topics and kind of hit on a lot of them, but also, like, the Simple Jack stuff is like, oh, this is bad. And, like, the movie kind of points it out. It's like, oh, this is, like, this is strange.
It keeps going. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even after they point it out.
I do wonder, like, from the three of you who have probably seen this more than I have, what is different about the director's cut? Because I think we all watched the two-hour director's cut, which is an extra 15 minutes. Like, does the theatrical work better, or is this, like, the version?
Can I just say, this is actually one of my favorite comedies of all time. I just think it's interesting that you guys, since you saw it later, it hits you different. I saw this right when it came out, and to this day, just, like, every part of it absolutely fucking works for me. The Simple Jack stuff works. The blackface stuff works. It's just, it walks that line of always knowing that the thing it's making fun of, like, they're also making fun of it. Like, they are not doing it in earnest, you know? The script is very tightly written for that. Yeah, to me, it always comes across as parody in a very, dare I say, woke way.
Do you have a favorite part or a favorite character or a favorite moment?
This was my Cruise awakening.
Ooh.
This movie was, I was very not on board with Cruise. I thought he was just some dumb action hero. I hadn't necessarily seen any of his stuff, but I just kind of was just not into him on principle.
So this was your audit?
Well, I was like, I heard he was like being different in this, or I don't even think I had heard. I just saw him. I was like, holy shit, that's Tom Cruise. And I was like, okay, he's got a brain. He's got a sense of humor. Yeah, he is absolutely a very high point in this. Yeah, just everything about his physicality is just absolutely perfect. The hair on his body and his head. the hands. Just, he really takes over that movie so successfully. But yeah, even like other characters, I would say like Jack Black, like I have loved Jack Black, and I also am not blind to his faults. He has made a lot of stinkers, no pun intended. But this one, like, it was kind of a bright spot after a fairly dark period for him, I feel like. Like, I was kind of slowly coming off of his horse, and Ben Stiller's for that matter, when this movie came out.
I feel like a lot of this comedy works because the actors are being self-deprecating sort of to their personas, and the people they're playing are jokes in a lot of ways. Like, their personas in general, like, it helps that Robert Downey Jr. isn't just playing a black guy, that he's playing
right.
this white, pretentious Australian.
Yeah, five-time Academy Award winner.
He's Heath Ledger.
Yeah, yeah, and he's dressing up, right? So, like, they have that one step removed. Yeah, there's a little less padding with the Simple Jack stuff. I think it's just that I don't think
he's
Stiller...
Sean Penn, though.
Yeah, I just feel like maybe if it wasn't Ben Stiller is where I was getting at. With, like, even with Jay Baruchel, it's like no one can remember his name in the movie, and it's like no one can remember Jay Baruchel's name in real life either. It's like, oh, yeah, what's his name, guy?
Did anyone else get a Galaxy Quest vibe watching it this time? I completely missed it the first, but like,
oh, it's like Galaxy Quest. It's like it's Three Amigos to a degree too.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that, but I mean the whole premise of like, yeah, you know, we're faking it until we're making it, I think that's the core of it, and that's why it's always going to work, and why ultimately I do enjoy this movie. It's right on that line. Like, most of it I'm good with, but like, even back when I saw it in theaters, and I don't know, to answer your question, Joy, I do not know what has been added. I just, yeah, I can't tell because I've only seen it once in theaters, and I wish there was a theatrical cut on the Blu-ray, but there just isn't.
Love a movie about the industry, from as recent as Dolomite to Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood this year is great.
Nick Nolte showing up. It was supposed to be more of like a Quint from Jaws entrance, but they even toned it down a little bit because Ben Stiller was like, we just have too many references in this movie.
So many Wilhelm screams.
I still do really enjoy it. I mean, I remember thinking it was hysterical and just thinking that the summer 2008 was like a great summer for those comedies. I own each of those comedies on Blu-ray.
Not HD DVD?
No, not HD DVD. By that point, I backed people. I had a friend that got really mad because I told him to buy HD DVD. Because I thought,
yeah,
I thought Toshiba was going to win because Toshiba was VHS and Blu-ray was beta, and it didn't win. And I just totally, yeah, I didn't know what Jay Baruchel enlightened us with in that movie.
It seems, according to MovieCensorship.com, which is kind of the best website in terms of figuring out what the difference between like theatrical, like different versions or whatever, it seems like the theatrical version is kind of hectic in its storytelling. It seems like this actually lets things breathe a little bit more and lets the story be explained a little bit more, which I can see, like, as a comedy, like, you kind of, you're, if you're not a Judd Apatow movie, they don't want to put out a two-hour comedy, right? Like, a two-hour comedy is kind of, like, I know this is more than a comedy, that is also an action movie to a certain extent, but, like, you kind of don't want to put out a two-hour comedy closer to an hour 40 feels right, and so I can see in theaters wanting to cut that down allows more room to breathe. It seems like there's more violence in this, especially in the war scenes.
Mm-hmm.
One big thing, like three of the minutes, or a little bit over three of the minutes, is that whole 1 week in, 1 week down party. Like, that whole party scene is apparently new. Like, that's a big, huge chunk. That's not in the theatrical version.
Okay.
You know, Mike, we always talk about how over on Hanks and Memories, especially like Big and also That Thing You Do, both added these like really long theatrical cuts or director's cuts, and we're just like, this is not better.
It's not,
like, it should have stayed out.
Different movie.
I don't know that I've ever seen the theatrical version of this, but according to what this, the way this describes, it seems like this is the better version.
Okay. I do remember now watching it at home and feeling like scenes were new, but not being able to like pinpoint exactly what. That party one makes a lot of sense. It kind of feels like there was a hard cut to the jungle in the theatrical version. And then I just think like there might be more, like the jokes may just go on a little longer. Like, I know when they're sort of talking about Simple Jack, or maybe when they're pretending to take a leak and do all in Jack Black strapped to a tree, I think maybe there's like an extra minute or something.
It seems like there's a lot of scenes that are like 10 or 15 or 20 seconds long. Like, there's just like a couple extra lines of dialogue here and there. And it seems like a lot of the actual, like, the weight of the guns they're carrying, like, whether they're real guns or movie props or whatever, it seems like a lot of that's kind of fleshed out more. So it just feels like this allows the story to be told a little bit more completely and get a better sense of the characters, as opposed to like, hey, Charlize Theron won an Oscar, let's give her 40 more minutes of screen time.
Yeah, I think now that you say it, like, I think the party, like, you just saw them partying, and then you see Steve Coogan going out to the beach to help the plot move.
So now on the flip side of the coin, Zach, you said that this is one of your favorite comedies of all time. Is there anything about this that doesn't work for you? Is there something about this movie that you're not a fan of that you would cut out or change or remove? Do you have a least favorite part of Tropic Thunder?
I guess some of the more action-y sequences towards the end can drag a little bit, but I also feel like they're a necessary catharsis to the structure of the movie. I will actually recant a little on the woke comment. In 2020, in the middle of an opioid crisis, it feels a little wrong to laugh at someone for having a heroin addiction. Yeah, I don't know. It really just all quite resonates with me.
Cool. And Kyle, what about you? Do you have a least favorite part? Is there something about Tropic Thunder that doesn't work for you?
But, you know, Ben Stiller's not, like, playing the straight man in this, but is he the least... No, he definitely gets wacky with the Simple Jack stuff. I don't know. Like, Ben Stiller might be my least favorite part. Supposedly, he didn't want to play the lead.
Yes. So he directed this.
Yeah.
And he wanted to play...
Matthew McConaughey's character.
Yes.
And then after that, it was Owen Wilson, but Owen Wilson...
He tried to kill himself. Yeah. And then...
And this was
off,
part of the McConaissance. Yeah.
When Ben Stiller was going to play the McConaughey role, they wanted Keanu Reeves for the Ben Stiller role.
Oh my God, that would
which would have been good. I just
we get to watch it twice.
It doesn't seem like the Ben Stiller world and like the Jay Baruchel world kind of overlap a ton. Like it kind of feels like two sort of parallel, similar tracks. Mm-hmm. And I think that it just blends the two in a way that we don't normally see.
Well, there's just a lot of funny guys in this. And so I don't know if it's like, I know they're not like competing with one another, but like in my own mind, or I'm not used to seeing these funny guys sharing the screen together. Like I know Jack Black and Ben Stiller have history, Cable Guy and before that, like all these, like mm-hmm. Robert Downey Jr. and Ben Stiller are like coming up together. Supposedly Ben Stiller went out for roles in like Hamburger Hill and Platoon and didn't get them. You know, he was just around that time of the 80s like movies, and like that's where he originally came up with this idea all the way back then in the late 80s. Like, wouldn't it be funny to see actors going through like a boot camp, which I know isn't what exactly happens in this movie, but
side note is that we've talked about boot camps on this podcast before, and also mm-hmm. on Thanks for the Memories, because Dale Dye, who was kind of the inspiration in a way for these podcasts, because I was listening to Dale Dye on Matt Gourley's podcast, I was there too. He for sure did Saving Private Ryan. I think he did early stuff with Tom Cruise too, like maybe for Taps. They wanted Dale Dye to consult on this because there is actual, you know, like this is, in a way, like it's a comedy, but it's also like a military movie, and they wanted Dale Dye, but like Ben Stiller was like, are you going to be okay kind of making fun of, you know, not, and he's just like, look, I love comedy. When shit goes wrong over there, like we resort to comedy, like really black comedy. Like as long as you're not making us do things that we would never do, like I am by all means, like I would love to help. So I think it's cool to see like Dale Dye, who's like this noted military expert, this guru in Hollywood, who has done, you know, Saving Private Ryan and all these like heavy hitting movies, also working on this movie. Like it's, there's an authenticity here in a way, even though the actors, the characters in the movie are not carrying real weapons, and they throw a grenade that only quote unquote explodes because Danny McBride hits the C4 that he strapped to a tree. It feels real in that way. Which I think is a cool touch.
It almost feels as if maybe Ben Stiller and Justin Theroux were trying to create this comedic magnum opus. Like, in a very weird mirroring way to what is happening in the movie. Like, it's just so much satire that, like, it just really blends even into the real world. I don't know if that's right. I don't know if that's what I have a problem with it. It's just all stuff that, like, it's for, you know, for a comedy, there is kind of, like, many layers to talk about.
Well, it's weird because I could see, like, why didn't Justin Theroux play the role? I'm not sure what he was up to around it, but that would have been good. Or even on the other side of the spectrum, you know, if you look at Nick Nolte, the character who he's based off of, or the person he's playing, the person that Ben Stiller's playing, even someone like a Philip Seymour Hoffman or something, you know, because I think part of the thing too is like Downey isn't really known for comedies, you know, like he's funny and stuff, but like he never did like Meet the Fockers or anything like that, and like not that this is down there on that level or anything, it's the same sort of playground, you know what I'm saying? Like it's sort of like pushing the boundaries of being offensive and funny. It's interesting that Ben Stiller sort of conceded, and or maybe that was part of the deal, because it does feel a little like he's pulled in multiple directions. I don't know, I can just kind of feel it a little bit compared to everybody else. He just maybe it works for his character that he's a little distracted, but he just seems kind of distracted.
You're saying that Steve Coogan is playing Ben Stiller?
Now, that's not a bad call either, you know, just like this intensely frustrated director who's like explodes and stuff.
Is that your least favorite part, Mike? Is that what you're saying? Or do you have a part that you like less than that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not even that I don't like things about this movie. It's just that I'm, like, for some reason, every time I watch it, I don't love it as much. Like, it's never, you know, like...
No, I'm in the same boat as you. I can't put my finger on it, yeah.
The one thing I was thinking of going through, and it's not like I don't have issue with Robert Downey Jr. in blackface either, but I think that filter of him... his character doing it through a character helps, but like sitting here watching it this time, like I was thinking to myself, like, what if that was just Denzel Washington playing a pretentious actor? They yell cut and Denzel sounds like completely different, like you've never heard him before. He's like putting on some kind of voice of like, you know, more of like a Shakespearean air or something like that, and then like they yell action and he turns into like a gritty Denzel, like the gritty war Denzel or something like that. Watching it this time sort of like fantasy casting certain roles and things.
I feel like my least favorite part is that screwball comedy element, because I don't think that it is that. Like, I think it is at times. I think that this movie is taking so many swings at so many things and connecting so well on some of it, like the inside, like the making of a movie, satire in certain ways, but I feel like it's taking so many shots. I really do wish that I loved this movie more, because I feel like I should, and I also love Justin Theroux as an actor so much that I feel like I want to love his writing more than I do, but it's trying to do so much and parody and spoof so much, or so many different kinds of comedy. The way that the movie opens with the trailers, like even before the DreamWorks logo or whatever, right? Like it goes right into the Al Pacino energy drink. It's like, this is incredible. Like, what is, I don't even know what's going on. Like, it's incredible. And then it gets into, you know, the Jack Black fat family where everybody's farting. It's just like, this is, and that doesn't work for me. And I know that's kind of the point. Like, it just, look at all these different kind of things that we've had to do over the years, but it's
like Scorcher 6, right?
It's cool. I get what they're doing, but it doesn't feel focused enough. Not that this is a bad movie, because I don't think it's a bad movie, but it's just not my cuppa. But I feel like if you focused in on one or two of these things, I think I could really, really love it. I think that because there's so many actors, like it almost feels like, sure, like let's have the movie be about everyone. Like, let's bring in Ben Stiller. Let's bring in Jack Black. Let's bring in, you know, Robert Downey Jr. Let's bring in all these, like, all of them have to have their own backstory. Like, I feel like if you had it about one or two of them, ideally maybe, you know, Robert Downey Jr., ideally maybe Al Pacino, I don't know, but, like, I feel like if you focus on one or two, I might love it more. I don't know that it would be as popular as it is. What works about this is that there's something almost literally for everyone, but I think that because they're doing that, it's not as specific as, you know, as enjoyable as I might like.
I find it very successful as a spoof of blockbusters in general. I mean, I think if you take it from the level that this is about spoofing blockbusters and the industry that creates them, it feels very focused. Coming back to the one thing that bores me on repeat viewings, the action parts, that's like the one part that's not successful to me, is when they stop talking about the industry and have to fight for their lives. That part works on first viewing, but isn't necessary on repeat viewings, perhaps. That's interesting. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to try and convince you, but I just want to make sure. I just want to say that from where I'm sitting, they connected on every swing.
I think maybe in that regard, like, I just don't like a lot of those blockbusters. Like, I like the kind of movie, like, a Scorcher. I mean, that's maybe a bad example, because I have a Fast and Furious podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have a podcast about, like, one of the biggest, craziest
franchises. A lot of the
franchises.
Things that they're making fun of, I hate. You know, it
Shouldn't
feels
that
like,
make you like it more?
Like that Tobey Maguire movie, like, right out of the gate.
Satan's Alley?
Maybe it's just that, oh, yeah, like, of course it would make fun of that. Like, that's stupid. Like, it's not funny. It's just, like...
Sort of too easy target.
Yeah, I think it's easy target. I think you're right, Mike. I think it's just, like some of this feels clever, and some of it just feels like, oh yeah, of course you would make fun of that.
I have a very strong connection to Nutty Professor. It was one of the first, like, quote-unquote adult movies I saw. That, Galaxy Quest, and Bowfinger. So I guess, yeah, I loved the port noise. Yeah, I could see why that wouldn't appeal to you in the same way, though.
Ben Stiller, maybe in general, like, he does feel a little pulled, like he should just be, the fact that he from the beginning, it's not like he was planning on it, you know, starring in it like Zoolander, let's say, from like the panda moment in the jungle, while that's like, I mean, that's silly, but from like that moment, like when he gets captured, to like, I mean, just the fact that there's a subplot including Simple Jack, like Simple Jack just seems kind of like should have been like the
one-off.
Yeah, the funny one-off thing, like even just one-off in the sense of that he gets to have the conversation with Robert Downey Jr., that there's this ridiculous poster in McConaughey's office, like something of that realm. But then that is the thing that these, you know, that like his captors love or whatever. That 15 minutes feels just like a little too much, like, and slows down.
But they make the grand comparison that a self-serious actor like Robert Downey Jr., Kirk Lazarus, is being just as ridiculous as an action hero, especially being successful in that, like, Satan's Alley realm is just as ridiculous as being unsuccessful, being Simple Jack. In some ways, it kind of feels like Ben Stiller's character took a bigger swing and put more on the line than Kirk, who has this natural ability. And that scene where they're deprogramming each other is just amazing.
That, exactly. No, you do get an awesome payoff like that, or even from the distance when Kirk and Alpa, like, from the distance, and he's like, "See, like, he took my notes." That's a funny moment. It's weird. Like, that's why I still can't put again. My finger. I love all that stuff. I do love the goofiness. It's really tough to put my finger on paper. This should be one of my all-time. I love all these guys. Like, I love a lot of their work and their, you know, comedy.
Mike, I do want to say that this continues the proud TomTom tradition of extended in-movie product placement that we had Coca-Cola in Volunteers, and now here we have TiVo, which
saves the day.
I thought you were going to talk about
Booty Sweat. I thought
that
too.
No, like, actual, like, because Booty Sweat's not a thing. Like, I love TiVo. I still use a TiVo. Like, I've used a TiVo for a decade now. I still have a TiVo. Like, I love that it's there, but it's also like, oh, this just feels...
Yeah, that's another thing that feels like a one-off joke. You know, he's upset because it's in his rider and he doesn't get it, and it's not going to come back around, and yet it propels, like, almost the whole second half of the movie, because he goes to complain that he doesn't have a TiVo, and that's when they call, and they're like, we have Tug the Golden Dragon, and Tom Cruise gets on the phone and has, like, the best fucking moment, I think, of the entire movie.
Oh, for every episode that we do, I pull a quote that I use as, like, the pull quote in iTunes. And do you know how difficult it is to find any quote by Tom Cruise in this movie that doesn't contain a swear? Like, just every line of dialogue, but, like, every sentence he says, basically, has at least one curse word in it. Like, the only one that I could find that's even, like, remotely memorable is... "We don't negotiate with terrorists," which is a beautiful line that gets a round of applause in the movie.
So well executed.
Everything else he says, and he doesn't have a ton of dialogue. He's probably on screen for 5 or 10 minutes, but when he's on screen, he's on screen. Everything he says is just aggressive and confrontational and emphatic and full of swears. And I was like, please, Mr. Cruise, give me one funny thing that isn't filled with, like, profanity that I can put on iTunes. And I finally found him, and I was like, geez Louis, like, it is just, he is committing to a bit, and it is working.
And I also just like the idea that it's, like, Chekhov's TiVo, because, like, it's the hand of God, literally, like, at the end of the movie, it comes down, and he throws it, and it stops the rocket. And then in McConaughey, you just see him, like, run off into the jungle.
Yeah, like a Jedi run really fast.
Clearly a CG double, but, like, it's hilarious. I love
all
that.
Well, it mirrors that first scene with the grenade and Ben's amazing hands.
Yeah.
The only other trivia note that I want to say is that, Mike, you and I have a history with stand-ins on movies, because we talked to Marco Kiris, who was Nicolas Cage's stand-in for a decade, and in the scene where they're video chatting with Tom Cruise, with Les Grossman, and they're trying to get the key grip to punch Steve Coogan to have his nose bleed. Apparently that took a long time, I guess because he was on set. Justin Theroux was Tom Cruise's stand-in for those, like, while they were doing that. So I just, like, it's a notable stand-in. So I think, you know, it's not necessarily fun trivia, but stand-in trivia.
From time to time, we mention how, like, we're watching stuff and I'll text you or you'll text me, but I believe I texted you last night. Bit of significance about this particular Cruise Club episode, and it's the one where Tom's cross, because at the very end at the Oscars, there's a shot of Tom Hanks in a wheelchair at, like, the Special Olympics, you know? So this, I think, is the first time that we've had Hanks and Cruise in the same movie. We've had Charlize and Keanu in the same movie, but I think that's the only crossover we had.
In the same line of dialogue in this movie, in the famous, I guess famous is the right word, full retard speech, they reference both Rain Man and Forrest Gump. I was like, hey, yes.
Yeah.
Any other things, any other thoughts to mention about Tropic Thunder before we nominate this for some awards and play a couple games? Zach, any other thoughts, any other favorite moments that you want to mention, any other things that you want to say before we do some fun stuff to end this up?
Who do you think plays Tom Cruise's character in Rain Man in the movie Tropic Thunder? Does Tom Cruise live in that universe?
Charlie Sheen. They were up for a lot of the same roles back then. The same kind of look and everything. I didn't stop laughing for, like, an entire scene when I saw this in the theaters originally, but when Ben Stiller's complaining about the child that he adopted, and how it's like very confrontational with him, and he doesn't want to like pick it up or anything. And McConaughey goes, "Yeah, well, at least you got to pick yours." And then like pan over, but I swear that kid, like, I looked like that kid when I was like a teenager. That made me laugh so fucking hard. And then at the end, he's on the G5 with him.
Yeah. So I love, I don't think we said his name yet, Bill Hader, and just like this kind of like uptight voice. He's yes, Les, of course. Like, you know, just his rapport with him, especially at the end, once he just, you know, says 8 Academy Awards and, you know, $400 million.
But a nutless monkey could do it.
Exactly. Les still brings him down a peg. Just there's so many like little lines in there, like right towards the end when Kirk is running back for Tug. These names are sometimes hard to remember.
Well, they're all like I guess intentionally nonsense, right?
Yeah, and so then I'm even forgetting his name now, but Kevin Sandusky. Is that his
name? That's very meta.
Uh huh.
Okay. Like when Kirk yells, "Cover me," and then you just kind of hear them like all yelling, and you just then you hear Jay Baruchel go, "With what?" It's just such a, I love, there's just so many little moments like that, that's why, you know, okay, I specifically rewatched it for this episode. Like, those are the moments that I enjoy and watch it multiple times for.
I did catch the DJ at the party.
Yeah.
It was the same DJ from Zoolander,
which is Justin Theroux.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
What?
And he also is apparently a stand-in in like one. He's like an extra in one other scene too. So he's in this movie twice.
Yeah, he's the helicopter pilot.
Oh, yes. Two very important questions. Well, actually, three very important questions. So first off, do you think Tom Hanks could play the Les Grossman role? And if not, what role could he play? I don't know that he could. I don't think that this is...
It's too mean for him.
It's against type, but it's also like... It's not that against type.
I don't know if I would have said Tom Cruise could have done this role.
I don't know if Tom Hanks had the kinds of experiences that Tom Cruise had behind the scenes. You know, it feels like Tom Cruise may have had, like, a tougher battle at some points of his career that, like, got nastier, and I don't know for which side would have been responsible. But I'm just saying, like, it seems like he's pouring a lot of life experience into this performance. And I just don't know. I just based on the movies and roles that Tom Hanks has gone through, I don't know if he has, like, I'm sure he's come across it. Of course, everyone has. But as much to absorb it this way and then spit it back out so perfectly.
I do feel like we are in the power broker, powerful men era of Tom Cruise. Like, where last movie, Lawrence of Arabia, he basically plays Marco Rubio, like, you know, this aspiring U.S. senator. And now here he's playing a studio executive. Like, not that Tom Cruise has ever been confused with people that aren't powerful. Like, he's, you know, an action star in just about every movie. He's in these roles now where just like, oh, I'm a world maker. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a king maker. I can make things happen either politically or in the film industry or whatever. It feels like he's tapping into something in these roles, these smaller roles. I would agree with you, Mike, that he has probably picked up on in his career, but never actually, you know, demonstrated on screen before.
Tom Cruise in real life already had that, like, on Oprah jumping on the couches, I'm in love. He always had that wild card factor to him. And then also, if you saw him 8 years prior, saw Magnolia before this, you know that he could play an over-the-top character that doesn't mind cursing. This role wasn't too far-fetched, but it was awesome seeing him, like, play ball in the sense of playing this small silly part in a comedy, because it's not like he's known for his comedic roles. And like, could Tom Hanks play this again? Like, I don't think so. Like, I mean, I think the wackiest and silliest you're gonna get him is going on SNL doing like David S. Pumpkins.
It's more wholesome fun, right? Like, it's
exactly. Like, I can't imagine him.
He
saying...
might be able to switch to like Danny McBride's character or Nick Nolte.
He like doesn't make fun. He likes to have fun. Right, that's how I think of it. But Nick Nolte's a good call. If he might have gone for that role, I might have been able to
see that. Or even the Kirk Lazarus, maybe.
I don't know if he has that prestige behind him that way. Or not that kind of prestige.
I don't think that he's necessarily the right age for this role, but we also... We know Mike, I feel like we ever try to get him and Cruise together in these recastings, essentially. But like, I think he could play the Bill Hader role. Like, I think he might be too old, but I could see him as that very sort of meek, like, yes, sir, Mr. Like a sidekick assistant kind of role, especially because I would love to see him and Cruise on screen together in those parts.
Just at big age.
Yeah exactly. That, bachelor party age, like when he was still in that run of his career, maybe.
Two questions. The answer to one, I think, is no. And the other answer to the other one, I think, is definitively yes. First question, does Tom Cruise run in this movie? He's not really, I mean, he dances for sure, which we will nominate, But other than that, he doesn't really move. He's just kind of like in a room the entire time. Does he run at any point?
I don't think he even does the running man. So
does he even leave the room?
I don't think so. Nope.
I don't think he doesn't even go to the Oscars.
Yeah, but he's in the tux.
This does kind of feel like, and I'm sure that he was game to do whatever, but it kind of feels like, Mike, what we've talked about, I think, I don't remember if you were on, it might have been your episode of Too Fast, where we talked about Hobbs and Shaw. All of Ryan Reynolds' scenes were ostensibly shot in that restaurant. Like, even at the end, in the freezer or whatever, it's probably in the restaurant. Like, later in the movie, he's in the restaurant alone. It's like, okay, you're going to get me for as much time as you need, but like, we're doing one location. Like, it's just going to be here. And like, make it whatever you need to make it, it's going to be, but like, I'm not leaving here. Like, this is what you get. And it feels like kind of maybe that, but it works.
Maybe, yeah. You get a day and one take.
Yeah. Which is all going to change with that vault technology from The Mandalorian.
The other question, I think it's yes, because why wouldn't it be? We found someone on Twitter named Harperfect who said you could replace Tom Cruise's character name in any movie with the name Lightning McQueen and not a thing would change. I mean, Lightning McQueen sounds like many things, but studio executive, absolutely. Why not?
Totally.
It sounds too much of a good do-gooder name. I don't know. I'm not afraid of Lightning McQueen.
But aren't you afraid of lightning when, like, Thor like brings down lightning? Like, lightning could be destructive, too.
But McQueen.
So, Mike, I think you're agreeing with me. I think you agree with me every time. But, like, yep. Overall, you think yes or no? Because it seems like Zach's not really sold.
Yeah, man. I mean, I have no doubt, but even when in doubt, just like I go with
just
it.
Just say yes.
I think so.
The last thing I have to do is nominate this for some awards. I'm afraid to ask because I think across the board, well, maybe not. Best film, worst film. Actually, we got rid of worst film. Best film, question mark? I'm going to say no. Best Tom Cruise film, no.
No, yeah.
Fine.
Best Cruise role, we're not going to say, but best Cruise supporting role, absolutely.
Oh, for yes. Sure. Yeah. Which he'll probably win because he doesn't have many supporting roles.
We've got four. This is a tough category, Mike. We've got Magnolia, which Kyle just mentioned before. We've got Magnolia, Tropic Thunder, and Lions for Lambs. So those are three pretty solid supporting performances. Most badass role, I'm going to say no. Most daring role to take, I'm going to say no because, like, he's bigger than Hollywood at this point. It's not like he would risk offending producers, right? He's like I revived the studio when I got into a fight with another producer. Like, I'm bigger than you, right? Like, it's, this is not daring. I think this is just like a fun role to take.
Yeah, he owns Hollywood. All right.
Most wasted performance, no. Best fight, for best Tom Cruise fight, this, he doesn't physically fight anyone in this movie.
The phone,
does he?
Fight though. Ooh.
He demands violence.
Well, that's gonna be in the freakout for sure. We're definitely gonna nominate that. Best theme song, soundtrack, score, I'm gonna say no. I mean, I got Ludacris' song stuck in my head now. We got the Flo Rida too. Like, those songs stand out, but like overall, I don't know if this movie necessarily is that memorable in terms of music. Is it or is it not?
No, I mean, it does in the same vein of Vietnam movies. It uses the same music, so it's nothing really new.
Best vehicle chase, race, Tom Cruise not involved with any. Best dance scene, there's got to be the two. It's just, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know how to describe that in a couple of words. Just like
air grinding.
Gyrating. He's like just dancing alone.
Just even that simple turtle like neck circle move was amazing.
It looks to me like he's bringing something. I've never seen anyone dance like this. It's almost like an Elaine from Seinfeld, if you know that. Like, yeah, but like, good. Like, it's a pleasing version of that. It's great.
He just looks the shape of like a minion.
Best Cruise outfit wardrobe. It's definitely memorable. I don't know if it's best. Like, the billowing chest hair is singed into my corneas, I think. But
I don't know if he'll ever put on this much makeup again. He's got prosthetics, he's got the hands, he's got the whole sort of persona thing going on.
All right, so I'll say bald cap, chest hair, and big hands.
Or just like Hollywood executive.
I mean, that shirt was pretty shiny.
Best sunglasses? I don't think so, right?
You have glasses.
I didn't see any.
Best death? He does not die. Best line, I'm going to say, we do not negotiate with terrorists.
Which one of you is the key grip? Punch that guy really, really hard.
Do you think if Les Grossman was in that room in Vietnam, he would have gone over and punched him, or would he still said that?
He would have had somebody do it.
It's his power.
He's got big fists, though.
The power is other people, controlling other people, not
true.
Punching hard.
Point.
Maybe I'll just drop the clip in because it's so specifically this, but like the take a big step back and literally fuck your own face. Like, that's kind of a powerful freak out.
This is Les Grossman. Who is this?
This is Flaming Dragon!
Oh, okay, Flaming Dragon. Fuck face. First, take a big step back and literally fuck your own face! Now, I don't know what kind of pan-Pacific bullshit power play you're trying to pull here, but Asia Jack is my territory.
So whatever you're thinking, you better think again. again. Otherwise, I'm going to have to head down there, and I will rain down on a godly fucking firestorm upon you. You're going to have to call the fucking United Nations and get a fucking binding resolution to keep me from fucking destroying you. I am talking scorched earth, motherfucker. I will massacre you. I will fuck you up.
Yeah, that's so pretty good. Epic.
Best sex scene, he does not have sex in this movie. Most athletic feat, he doesn't do anything. I mean, he dances, but we already nominated that. Best running scene, we said he does not run. He's not involved in a love story. Best ensemble cast, I will say, Tropic Thunder, because this is nothing if not an ensemble piece. And then best non-Cruise actor, male or female. Is there a woman in this movie?
Alicia Silverstone in the crowd.
Ben Stiller's wife in Simple Jack.
Yeah, Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Mostly no, right? Shit, like, this is just like 100% dude.
Yeah.
So then best non-Cruise actor male, is there someone here that you think rises above the ensemble to so stand out in this movie to nominate this against the best of the best of the rest of his films? Or do we think that the acting is, as the ensemble, is worthy enough?
I'll stick with the ensemble versus, like, Soul, like Downey Jr. or whatever.
All right, so we have six nominees. Best Cruise supporting role, best dance scene, best outfit wardrobe, best line, which is probably going to get cut, best freak out, and best ensemble cast. So shout out Tropic Thunder. Solid showing.
Not as many nominations or wins so far as the movie itself, Tropic Blunder.
This will not win 8 awards because it can't.
Yes, it can't. So
I can see a nominee. I can see it winning one or two, depending. You know, dance scene for sure, possibly. Right. You know.
But the podcast we make about making this podcast.
Well, so Mike, I mentioned before, next Cruise Club episode, we've got Valkyrie. Which, have you seen Valkyrie? Because I have. I think I might have started it and didn't finish it.
I have seen it. And I liked it. I remember enjoying it.
Well, we will get to that in 2 weeks. But before then, we have a movie called Toy Story 2 over on the Hanks of the Memories feed. So that's very exciting. Just had Zach on a couple episodes ago. We said to talk about the first Toy Story. And so now we're bringing in Jesse and the Prospector in Bullseye to talk about Toy Story 2. So that's going to be very, very exciting as well. But Zach, thank you for joining us on this podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And Kyle, thank you for joining us too. If you want to mention, you're in the midst right now. This episode comes out Friday the 14th. Happy Valentine's Day, guys.
Oh, happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
You are in the midst of your New Orleans takeover. If you want to give a quick rundown of what is going on Foodie Films this month.
Yeah, on Foodie Films, since this episode has come out, I was back in New Orleans, but I did a trip before this and recorded 5 episodes, which, you know, I release episodes on Wednesdays. It was every other Wednesdays, but this month it's every Wednesday, and including then the first Wednesday of March, which is Ash Wednesday. I'm releasing those in honor of the amazing festival Mardi Gras, and something that I'm just going to start doing on Foodie Films for the first cut episodes, going out of the New Jersey, New York, just general tri-state area, and talking to people, you know, other foodies in different states. So it was really fun and had some great conversations, so please check it out.
And Zach, I don't think I asked if you have anything to plug. Is there anything else that you want people to know about, you know, photography or otherwise, that you want people to check out?
My Instagram is at Zach Dizon. I post photos there. Check it out.
Well, for all things Cruise Club, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, run@cageclub.me. Come back in 2 weeks for Valkyrie. Come back next week for Toy Story 2 on Hanks for the Memories. We are now, I think, 2/3 of the way done with Cruise Club. So we're rapidly approaching the end, but we still got plenty of movies, including some that I have not seen, so I'm very excited about that. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Kyle Reinfried of the Foodie Films Podcast and Zach Dizon, and we'll see you next time right here on Cruise Club.
Let me talk to you. Let me talk to you. Let it rain. Let me talk to you. Come on.